All right, everybody, thanks for joining us. I will tell you that right now, calls are extremely light. It looks like we're probably only going to be doing an hour today, and right now we don't even have enough questions for an hour. So I'm not sure what happened. I know the text went out a little early today, but if you want to get through with a question, a comment, a topic, now is your chance. If you press 1 on your phone right now, I guarantee we'll get to you. Sometimes it'll stay light. Other times we'll just get flooded here in a little bit. So the sooner you press 1 on your phone, the better the chances are that you'll get through. There we go.
Your money, your taxes, your truck, and your road to success in the trucking industry.
This is Trucking Business
and Beyond, the show that puts the money where it belongs, back in your pocket.
Welcome to my world. I'm your host, Kevin Rutherford. The website is letstruck.com. The show is all about the business of trucking. We take your calls and we answer your questions about trucks, money, fuel mileage, maintenance, tires, taxes, technology, health and fitness on the road, getting started as an owner-operator, finding freight, working with brokers. The list goes on and on. If you've got a question about anything at all, pick up the phone, give me a call. I'll do my best to get you an answer. That's what the show is all about. We're going to get to those calls in just a couple minutes. A couple things I want to remind you of. It is the end of the year. It's really tax time. You know, I know most people think of April as tax time, but when you run a business, you can't wait until April. In fact, you can't even wait until January because it's too late to do anything in January. The only thing left in January to do about your taxes is retirement contributions. You can still put in some retirement money after the year's over and lower your tax sum. But remember that retirement contributions never lower your business tax. And when you are in business, self-employed, an independent contractor, lease purchase, any of those titles where you are paying your own self-employment tax, you're paying your own Social Security and Medicare, retirement contributions do not affect that. Health insurance premiums do not affect that. Those are both considered personal tax deductions, not business tax deductions. So if you run a business, if you are self-employed, if you're an independent contractor, a lease purchase operator, you can't wait until the year is over to think about your taxes. You have to start now. And I say now because it at least gives you the last quarter to get caught up on bookkeeping, look at what the numbers are like, make some estimates, and then take some action to lower that tax. You really should be doing that every month. But at the end of the year, I always push it hard because I know that the vast majority of you, over 90% of you, aren't doing it every month. Now is your time. Get caught up this year. We have tons of programs that can help you. In fact, we've added some new programs recently so that we can help anybody and everybody in this area. If you need help just knowing what to do, but you want to do all the work yourself, we can show you how to do that. We have the programs. If you don't want to do any of it yourself, but you want to report every month, we can do that for you too. All you have to do is go to the website or call us. It's letstruck.com. Or you can give us a call at 855-800-FUEL. 855-800-3835. The other thing I want to remind you about is our recording times. We record every week, same time. I mean, we mix it up once in a while, but for the most part, it's the same time. Now, the best thing to do, so if we do move a recording time, you'll know about it. The best thing to do is get on our text message list. Now, I'll give you the days and times that we normally record. But if we have something else going on, or especially if we're on the road traveling, we do change these up some weeks. So Normally, it's every Wednesday, Thursday, and Friday at 1 p.m. Eastern Time. Now, sometimes we record on Mondays or Tuesdays if we need some extra time. And again, the best way to know when we're recording, what the phone number is, how to join us, all of those things, is just to get on our text message list. Doesn't cost anything. It's free. You can take yourself off the list really easy anytime you want. But to get on is easy, too. Just pull out your phone. Just like you are going to send a text message to anybody, open up whatever program you use to text, and where you would normally put in a phone number, you're just going to put in what's called a short code. And that short code is 99,000. The word you're going to text, just one simple word. Don't worry about capitalization or punctuation or anything. Just text the word listen to 99,000. That's it. Wait about 30 seconds or so. You should get a message back confirming that you're on the list. And then after that, every time that we are recording or doing a podcast, we will send you a text message, usually about 15 minutes before you can start dialing in. And we'll tell you we're recording, here's the show we're doing, here's the number, and you just dial that number and sit and listen, or you can jump in and ask a question. So if you've been trying to get in on our live weekend shows and you can't get through, that's pretty common. We have people tell us they've been dialing for months and can't get through. It's easier on the recorded hours. In fact, if you dial in early and press 1 as soon as you get through, I guarantee you I'll get to your call and your question. Now, if you come in later in the show, sometimes our recorded hours get pretty darn busy, too. So the key on the recorded hours, just get in early, and then I will get to you, and I'll be able to help you out. Let's see. Let's go to some phone calls. I've got some other things. We'll come back to those later. We're going to start off in Iowa. Cheryl, welcome to the program. I think we just lost that call just when I was going to it. Let's try Ohio. Herschel, welcome to the program.
Hey, Kevin. You there?
What's up today?
Oh, yeah, okay. Question about the blood ketone meters. I was on Amazon yesterday just poking around to see what I could find. I come across several meters. I range them from $30 to $80. No big deal. But then the strips that go along with them can get quite pricey. I've seen them all the way from 10 of them for $30 and sometimes higher. But I also came across one that did say ketone and glucose test strip that was a package of 100 for $5.99. And I'm thinking, and I didn't see the meter that had that name. So I'm thinking, I wonder if the little strip is interchangeable with whatever meter, and all the strips are uniform and the same, and you can use any strip with any meter, or, well, I don't have any idea. What do you, no? Okay.
No, you can't. In fact, the strips for each meter actually come with a code that coincides with each meter, and it used to be that you had to know the codes, and you had to do, you know, make some entries into your meters to make a certain strip work. Well, they got rid of that. It's pretty automated now, but the strips are not interchangeable. The other thing I'd be very concerned about, I've never seen a strip that could read both. It either reads ketones or it reads glucose. I've never seen one, and I've never seen one anywhere near that cheap. The other thing I'll tell you, the problem with this is, I ordered some ketone strips about a month ago, and I haven't got them yet. They're not very easy to find. Yeah. Most of these companies are like, I don't know, it's kind of weird. They're repackaging stuff. Now, when I get them, they're all sealed, so I don't worry about that. But they're not in their original box. It's like people are buying some of this stuff in bulk and just repackaging it, shipping it back out. And I think the reason is because the ketone strips are typically only designed and used for type 1 diabetics. And there really aren't that many type 1 diabetics. It's not a big deal. And nobody has ever used a ketone meter for any other reason. This whole idea of, you know, testing your ketone level in a healthy individual or even a type 2 diabetic in order to make sure that you are staying in ketosis, this is a really new idea. And the people who make the meters and the strips have been approached by, you know, some of the big authors, some of the big doctors who are behind this, and they've just shown no interest in this market. So I think what you're getting is just these little individual companies who are buying the ketone strips in bulk and then reselling them, and most of them aren't very dependable. My last order took me about 3 weeks to get. This one's been a month now, and I have no idea where it is. So I've been out of strips for a couple weeks.
Well, the reason that I want a meter is I've been trying my best to do the ketogenic way of eating. And I do track, you told me to get down around 20 on the carbohydrate, and that's what I've been doing. But I'm still not losing them. Well, blood meter would tell me for sure where I am. So.
Yeah, let me put you on hold because that's a good point. We'll come back to that. Stick around. I'm Kevin Rutherford. Welcome back. I'm Kevin Rutherford. The website is letstruck.com. I'm going to go back to Ohio. Hirsch, are you still with me?
Yes, I am.
Okay. So you're right. The blood meter would help. And I'm going to continue using mine. I will tell you that finding strips is difficult. The breath meter now seems to be working much more accurately. I have a feeling it has something to do with activity level. If I'm really active, the breath meter, the ketones just drop down to almost nothing. But the last couple of weeks since we were on the road, now I've been home and we're really busy, I'm not physically active. I'm working a lot, you know, reading a lot, writing a lot, doing a lot of shows, catching up on stuff. But I haven't been real physically active. And on the breath meter, my ketones are through the roof. Now, I wish I had some blood strips so I could verify it, but every other time when I had the blood strips, they were pretty close. So you might want to consider the breath meter, although that took me a month to get to. So
what does that thing cost, Kevin?
I think it was like $180. So, you know,
okay,
significantly more than the blood meter, but then there's no cost after that. I mean, I can test my ketones 80 times a day if I want on this meter, and I never have any other cost. So I do like it. It's easy just to grab it, blow in it, see what's going on. But if you're not losing weight, things going wrong, I can promise, because everybody consistently loses weight. That's the one thing we absolutely know. In fact, when you are in full-blown ketosis and you have excess weight, most people report a half a pound to a pound a day in the beginning. I mean, it is radical weight loss, or what we think of as radical, but it works. So if you're not losing weight, something is going on. If you get the macronutrients correct, your carbs are low enough and your protein's low enough, and you've got enough fat available, and you're still
not losing weight,
yeah, and if all that's happening and you're still not losing weight, The next place I would look would be thyroid function. That seems to be the one thing that can screw people up, is some sort of a thyroid issue. So one of the things that I'm actually doing, I'm not sure how I'm going to pull this off yet, but I'm committed to it. I am actually going through a pretty intensive course on nutritional therapy. It's a year-long program, and it requires about 20 hours a week of reading and study time, and I just started it this week. So those are some of the things that I've been finding as I talk to some of the other doctors that believe this, is that part of this is understanding the thyroid system and how hormones are affecting all this, and helping people cure a lot of this stuff with just food. And that's what this whole program is about. So, again, if you get the macronutrients right and you're not seeing the result, we need to double check that you have the macronutrients right. That's the most important thing. And if you've got the carbs low, then I would double count your protein. It is the one thing that trips me up every time. If I eat too much protein, I will knock myself out of ketosis. Now, it's not a bad thing. I don't feel bad, but my weight loss will stop, or I will start gaining a little bit again. Not a lot, but if I stay in ketosis, I feel really good. And my weight stabilizes, my appetite stabilizes, my mood stabilizes. And the one thing that will trip me up every time is too much protein. So double check the protein content and make sure you're getting enough fat. But if you get that right, then I would recommend you find a naturopath or somebody who specializes in thyroid function and have that checked. Let's go to Pennsylvania. Brian, welcome to the program.
Hi, Kevin. I guess I have a three-part question. My personal vehicle, I truly really only use it to run to the shop, to run, get parts, et cetera. And then, you know, on the weekends, we drive my wife's car. I'm wondering if there's any way, if I buy a used pickup here, that I'd be able to depreciate the whole thing. And part two would be if it makes any difference if you form an S-Corp. And I guess part three would be if the off chance you do use it for, end up using it for personal use, I'm wondering if you could rent it to yourself on a per-trip basis or something like that.
Okay, let me address this, and I'm going to make it real simple for you. Let's eliminate the S-Corp because that doesn't change anything, so we can just throw that one out. You can do this as a sole proprietor, a partnership, an S-Corp, a C-Corp. It doesn't matter. It's basically all the same. The next issue is, if you bought the truck and it's used solely for business, could you depreciate it? Yes, you could. You could depreciate the whole thing. You could write off all the expenses. But I'm going to tell you not to, because there's a better way. The better way is just to use the mileage allowance that the IRS gives us, 50-some cents a mile, usually. I haven't looked at it in a while, and it changes. But it's a very generous mileage allowance, and it simplifies everything. And let me explain why. If you want to use, your two choices are writing off the actual expenses it costs you to own that vehicle, which includes depreciation, interest, maintenance, insurance, tolls, parking, all that stuff. Or you can just use the allowance and just keep track of your miles. Those are your two methods. The mileage almost always ends up being more, and it's much easier. Here's why. If you do the expense thing and you use your vehicle at all for any personal reason, now you have to do this complicated percentage split. You have to take all your mileage for the business, all your mileage for personal, figure out a percentage, and let's say it turns out that you use it 91% of the time for business. Now you've got to go through all your expenses and adjust them by 91%. And it's just a nightmare. And if you're doing that and you sell the vehicle, you're going to have to recapture the depreciation. So it's much easier, and the deduction ends up being just as big and most of the time bigger just by saying, I'm just going to keep track of my business miles. And if I use it personally, great, I won't write those miles down. I'll just keep track of my business miles, take the deduction with the allowance, and I'm done. Nice and simple.
Thanks, Kevin.
You're welcome. Thanks for the call. A lot of people get confused with that one, and I'm glad you're asking, because most owner-operators, most business owners aren't taking the deduction at all. So keep track of your business miles and use the allowance. In our software, Profit Gauges, it's one of the first things we ask you every month. Did you have any business miles on your personal vehicle? And it doesn't have to be a vehicle that is dedicated to the business. You could have one car for the whole family. But if you use that car for business, then you get to deduct those miles. Again, in our software, you don't need to know any of this stuff other than how many miles did you put on your personal vehicle for business use this month. You put in the miles, we calculate the deduction, we keep the allowance up to date. So really, really simple. And this is a deduction you absolutely want to take advantage of. Let's go to Maryland. Larry, welcome to the program.
Hello, Kevin. I picked up my brake safe kit for the three axles and my at the house, dropped the truck off at the shop, and said, put these on for me and do a charge air cooler test. I picked it up this morning, and I was surprised to see that I got a bill of 3 hours of labor to put on the brake safe. And my first question was, did you read the instructions?
Did the 3 hours include the charge air cooler test, or that was just the brake safe?
That's just the brake safe.
You know what I think they probably did? I see shops do this all the time. They probably looked at each axle individually and said, you know, it's going to take us maybe 20 minutes per axle, maybe 30 at the outside. And they probably said, we're just going to hit them with a minimum hour per axle. Whereas the whole job, they probably should have gotten you for about an hour and a half. So I think they probably charged twice as much as they should have.
Yeah. I know the guy who owns the shop, and I told him when I brought it in, I was thinking about an hour and a half.
Yeah, hold that thought. I'm going to get to a break, and we will be right back. Stick around. I'm Kevin Rutherford. Welcome back. I'm Kevin Rutherford. The website is letstruck.com. I was talking with Larry in Maryland. So, Larry, I think you were right on with about an hour and a half is pretty reasonable. 3 hours, like I say, I think they looked at each axle, said they're just going to charge you an hour minimum. And I think that's a little overboard.
Okay. I've known the owner for 8 years, and it's a new mechanic, and I'm going to try and be diplomatic about it. But I will tell you this. on the positive side, these things are impressive. I told the kid when he put them on, I said, you know, you get one on, and it should be easy for the rest.
Right. So
I picked up the truck and looked how it works. I don't know why these things are not on every OEM coming off the lot.
I think the same thing. This is, it's one of those products you look at and you go, oh my God, the cost is almost nothing. And the work and time that it saves and the ability to just walk around the truck, look at where the brake stroke is, diagnose all the different problems that you could figure out. You're right. This is one of those that I don't understand why this isn't standard on every truck.
I'm showing it off to everybody. And with it being brake safety, it'll pay for itself with my first inspection.
Well, and here's the thing. The inspectors understand this product. They get it. So when they walk around and look at it, it's the same for them. They don't have to go through that whole in-depth inspection. They can look at it and go, first off, this guy cares about his brakes because he took the time to install the product. And second of all, we can see what the results are. I mean, we can look and see that the brakes are all within stroke. Why go any further?
Well, I want to thank you, Kevin, because if I wasn't listening to you, I wouldn't have known about it. And I'm going to try and get as many people with the company that I'm leased to put them on there because they are impressive.
Excellent. Thank you. I appreciate it. I really do. We love this product. We've been working with this company for many, many years. They used to have a much more complicated product that did kind of the same thing, but it was all electronic, and you could see the results up in the dash while you were driving. And I actually had it on my trucks, and I liked it. But it was a little expensive, and it was more complicated. And this one is so drop-dead simple that you need this on every truck and trailer. You need it on every axle that has brakes. And it is very inexpensive. No maintenance. Once you put it on, you're done. Simple to install. So you can check it out in our store at letstruck.com/store. So go check it out, letstruck.com/store. And it's brake safe, really simple, very powerful product. So, again, we're excited that we formalized that partnership and we now have that in our store. Let me get back to some phone calls. Let's go to Pennsylvania. Richard, welcome to the program.
Hey, Kevin. How are you today?
Doing good. What can I help you with?
Well, I talked to you a few weeks ago about oil. And I ordered an OPS filter, or the system, sitting at home right now. I'm just kind of curious, what should be my next purchase? I already have a Fleet One Air filter, Fleet Cell Air, air tabs and deflectors. What should be my next purchase to put on here?
Are we looking more to lower fuel cost or maintenance cost first?
Really fuel.
Okay. If fuel is the priority, and I think it should be, because we can save more money faster in fuel, then we can start investing in some of the maintenance savings products later on. So I think it makes sense to focus on fuel first. I would do the Flow Below. That is one of the products we are seeing about the quickest return, other than things like, obviously, the scan gauge. Do you have a scan gauge yet?
Not yet.
Okay, then scan gauge hands
down. I was
down
thinking
for,
about getting that, but I wasn't exactly sure.
Yeah, you know, the scan gauge is $200, less than $200, and the return is a matter of weeks. I mean, literally, we see everybody gets their money back in less than a month. So that is the number one recommendation for fuel economy. But the flow below is certainly getting up there. Now, it's a little more expensive. You're going to pay $1,500 or so, depending on the configuration. But we're seeing a break even on that product in less than 6 months. And it's simple. There's no maintenance. It lasts forever. So that's a good option. But you need to do the scan gauge first.
Okay. All right. Not a problem. Thank you.
You're welcome. Thanks for the call. Now, both of those are available in the store. We are expanding our store. We are adding, first off, all of the products of the companies that we partner with. And we're also looking at some new products where we may not be completely comfortable partnering with the company, but we might like the product enough that we will offer it and explain it and service it. And, you know, so sometimes over the years there have been some issues where we liked a product, but maybe we weren't all that crazy about customer service or we had some concerns. So you will see us start to add more things to the store. If we think it can help you out, then we'll get it up in there. So if you haven't been to the store in a while, check it out. Let's see. Let's head off to Alabama. Jason, welcome to the program.
Hey, Kevin. Thanks for taking my call. I got a question. We currently drive a truck for a guy. He gets a percentage, and we get a percentage, and we pay the fuel. He pays maintenance. He's currently using just regular dyno oil in all our oil changes, but I was trying to see it about talking him into switching to synthetic to help us get better gas mileage. Now, I know my personal Super Duty Ford gets better gas mileage when I use synthetic, but I didn't know if it would be, because he'll want us to pay the extra cost versus the dyno and synthetic. Do you think we could see a return on that better gas mileage if we paid the extra money to switch him to synthetic?
How often is the oil being changed? How many miles?
We're doing every 50,000 miles.
50,000, okay. Yeah, it's pretty close. You're going to see roughly a 3% increase in fuel economy over. Now, you could also switch to a 30-weight oil and see about the same gain. And that can either be a 30-weight synthetic blend, so you can look around and find the best price, and you'll get about that same 3% gain. So if we just do some rough numbers, if the truck is getting 7 miles to the gallon and we can get a 3% gain, that gets us roughly 0.2 mile per gallon. Hard to measure in the real world, but we know it's there. 0.2 saves you about $2,000 a year. Your oil change cost will almost double, though, depending on which oil you choose. That's why I want you to shop around. But at 50,000-mile changes, there is still some net gain. You will save money by doing it. Now, you'd save a whole lot more money if you would put on an OPS, an EcoPure, and only change the oil when you absolutely have to. Then
right.
synthetic oil
right.
really makes a lot of sense.
Yeah, I don't know if we could talk them into doing that. I mean, it makes sense. If it was our truck, we would definitely do it. But he's like, he wants to keep that maintenance cost down, and he just doesn't realize that that could actually keep it down even more.
Oh, considerably more. Tell me this. What made you enter into an agreement like this? Because I've seen a lot of these. I think they're kind of goofy. Is he paying you also as an independent contractor?
As an independent contractor, we get 60% of the rate per mile plus 100% of the fuel surcharge.
But you have almost no control over the vehicle.
No control, just we pay fuel on it. So driving
yeah,
slower,
which,
of course.
See, and that's that's kind of why I think there's a huge conflict. You're paying for the fuel, but you don't get to control how the truck gets worked on, how it gets maintained. I mean, if it's working for you, great. But like I said, I've seen a lot of setups like this, and I'm not a big fan. I've got to get to a break. We'll be right back. Stick around for more stuff. Kevin Rutherford. Welcome back. I'm Kevin Rutherford. We're down to the final segment. I'm going to get right back to some phone calls. We're going to head off to Iowa. Cheryl, welcome to the program.
Hi again, Kevin. How are you today?
Good. What can I help you with?
Well, we got cut off yesterday. Blog Talk sometimes doesn't like me. I guess she's got like a quota on how long I can talk.
Maybe
we
so.
We were talking about the 12.7. We were talking about transmission. And right when we hung up, when we got disconnected, so it sounds like look for the N14, right? And we like running wet, and we actually like the mountains. Now, if we can choose loads with Landstar that don't weigh 40,000 pounds, then we'll be more in the green there. How happy would we be with an 18 speed? Because I like what you were saying about having more gears to grab, climbing the mountains, you know, to make it, the driving experience better.
Yeah, you know, I'm not a big fan of an 18-speed except in some really specialized, usually very heavy haul. And here's why. With normal weights up to 80,000 pounds, you are virtually never going to split those lower gears. And that's really the only difference between an 18 and a 13 is that in an 18,
okay,
we can split every gear. As in a 13, we can only split the top half. But at 80,000 pounds, I'm not going to bother splitting every one of those lower gears. It takes me forever to get moving, and it's just a lot of shifting for nothing. Now, once
right,
we get up into the top half of the transmission and the ratios are a little wider, now it makes sense to split those gears. It makes it a little more drivable. We can improve fuel economy a little bit. But I think that for an 80,000-pound operation and under, the 18-speed is just overkill. It's more expensive. It's more complicated. It's heavier. And those splits on the bottom half are just going to sit there. You're never going to use them.
Okay. So but there's not a downside to not splitting the lower gears. You can just go ahead and go through the lower end and then split and go to the top.
You know, most people, yeah, and there's no downside to that. And that's what most people with 18 speed end up doing. They drive it like a 13 anyway. I mean, honestly,
okay,
when I drive a 13 speed, 95% of my gear splits, the only thing I'm splitting is 11th, 12th, and 13th. That's it.
Okay.
And really, 85% of those are 12th and 13th. The only, like, I'm not, I again, you're really not heavy enough very often and on a hill and shifting through the gears that you're going to split 6 and 7, 7 and 8, 9 and 10, 11 and 12, 13. You're just, very seldom do you do that. Even on a 13-speed, you end up, most of your splits are just those last couple of gears anyway.
Okay. Thank you for that. Now, we understand pretty clearly, the process of going through and checking out a truck and before we buy it. So one of the concerns that we have that we're having trouble getting past logistics of, you know, you've already started, pulled the rig dig, now you're talking to the owner, you're asking them to get, you know, oil samples and And how do you keep somebody from, one, selling it to Chuck to somebody that walks in and doesn't care, like a dealer? I know a lot of dealers are scooping these trucks up. Or would say we give them a deposit to hang on to it because we like what we've seen so far, and having them still sell it and not give us our money back. And at what point do you decide to get, to try to put a deposit to try to secure it? Am I making sense there?
Yeah, you are. And there's no absolute answer to this. You know, if there's two ways to look at it. One is, there are a lot of trucks available, and if I miss out on one, there'll be another one. I mean, the one thing we don't want to get is so desperate that we ever believe this is the only truck. Now, could we lose a truck that might have been a great deal? Yeah, you might once in a while. But if you're looking every day, you find a truck when it comes onto the market fairly early, you get right on this stuff, there's a pretty good chance you're going to be okay. Now, I like putting a deposit down so that I know I'm good. And this just comes down to the reputation and the ethics of the dealer. I mean, if I go to the dealer and I say, look, here's the thing. I'll give you a $1,000 deposit. That means you can't sell this truck until you talk to me and I get the first decision on whether I want to buy it or not. Now, you could come to me and say, hey, I have somebody else interested. You need to decide today. And if you don't decide today, I'll give you your money back and I'm going to sell this. Now, I always like to negotiate the deal where if you decide you're going to sell it out from under me, you give me first chance. But you decide that I either have to decide today or you're selling it, then I think you should just give me all my money back because you haven't lost anything in this deal. You're still going to sell the truck, no big deal. If I come to you at some point in the process and say, you know, the oil sample didn't look good, or I found a better truck or whatever, I'm not going to buy this one, then I think the dealer should keep some part of that. And that has to be negotiated up front. It's 10%, 20%, whatever. And I'm okay with that.
Okay.
But if the dealer is going to sell it out from under me and I say, look, I'm just not going to make up my mind that fast, sell it, then I think I should get my deposit back. That all has to be negotiated up front. And then it just comes down to ethics. I mean, if I negotiate a deal like that and then the dealer sells it without asking me, that's a problem. Or if he sells it or doesn't sell it, doesn't want to give me my deposit back or whatever we negotiated, then I'm clearly never going to do business with that dealer again. And I'm going to tell everybody they're, you know, not very ethical. We had an agreement. They didn't stick to it. But the big part is get this stuff clear up front.
Okay.
And don't be afraid to ask. You know, don't be afraid to ask, to say, hey, look, I'll give you $500. I'll give you $1,000. Here's the way I like it structured. If I cancel, you keep $200 of it. If you cancel, I should get it all back.
Okay. And then one last question about getting the oil sample. We've seen a couple of trucks that have some recent work done, and they had a recent oil change. That oil sample's not going to do us any good. Is there a concern there, like not knowing, not being able to get a good oil sample?
You know, the
the
most common scenario, and I've dealt with this for years, is if the truck is already on a dealer's lot, you can just about forget an oil sample. The first thing every dealer does is service the truck. So, yeah, there's some concern there. It doesn't mean I wouldn't buy the truck. It would, if a lot of other factors are in my favor, then I'm okay. But what I prefer, and this is, you know, something I developed over years, was I had three or four dealers that I worked with. I didn't buy trucks usually on the open market from an individual. I just had a couple dealers that I'd work with. I would send them what I'm looking for. I want... This is my first preference. I want this year, this engine, this transmission, these rear ends. The closer you come to this spec, the more likely I am to buy the truck from you. If you get close, call me, let me know, but don't service that truck. So So when you find it at the wholesale lot, when you buy it at auction, if you want me to buy it, then don't service it, because you know that I'm going to come in and I'm going to want to look at it before it's all cleaned up. I'm going to want to pull an oil sample. And that, again, was a matter of building that relationship and having that trust with the dealer and also being serious. What I mean by that is I just wasn't out kicking tires. I didn't just
right.
go tell a dealer, hey, I'm looking for this truck. I only did that when I was serious. So that dealer knew if he found the right truck and he didn't service it, there was a very good chance that I was going to buy that truck. And I wouldn't even beat him up quite so hard on the price. That, again, is all the give and take of building a relationship. You know, if there is no oil sample because you serviced it, well, I'm going to push harder to get a better price. If you do everything I ask and I get to do all these inspections and I get to do my oil sample, I'm going to let you make some money on that. You know, that because that's uh-huh. part of the give and take. So that's really the best case scenario. When you've got a couple dealers or a couple sales guys that are out there looking for the right truck, they know what you expect. You've built that relationship. They know you're serious about buying. That's really the ideal scenario. And you know what? On your first truck, you're never going to get this perfect. I mean, I developed that system over years of buying a lot of used trucks. There was a time when I was probably buying 3 used trucks a year, and I had dealers that knew that, and I worked with them, and it was a great relationship. So on your first truck, get as close as you can. It's not going to be perfect, but you're asking all the right questions. You're doing all the right stuff. I've got to get out of here. I'm all out of time. We'll see you next time. Be safe. Be profitable, be fit and healthy. Always do the hard work and master the journey. I'm Kevin Rothberg. All right, everybody. Thanks for joining us today. Calls are heavy, but questions are really light. So rather than try to get a bunch more questions right now, we're just going to call it a day. And we will see you back here tomorrow. Thanks for joining us.